welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today I'm sitting down with Cameron Clark, CEO of multi-state operator Sunderstorm, to discuss both his business as well as the future of the cannabis industry. This conversation was recorded in person on November 29th, 2023.
So basically to start off, I really want to understand what the state of the industry is at the end of 2023, because right now there's kind of been a scaling back, so to speak, of people kind of like circling the wagons, trying to figure out what's going on. Is there going to be federal legalization? New markets are opening up. What the hell is going on?
Right. Yeah. Oh, the industry is definitely in turmoil. There's no doubt about that, right? Particularly California. And I think it's just, it's a series of factors that are all kind of coming together at the same time that are playing into this. And when I talk about the industry, I'm talking about the licensed cannabis industry, right? So, for example, in California, the industry made the mistake that when the growth happened during COVID, the industry expected that growth to continue, right, post-COVID. And the reality is that a lot of consumers, ended up getting up off their couches and getting back to work, and so they actually started consuming less, right? And so sales began to drop, which makes sense, 10, 15, 20% in the industry in California. And then you juxtapose that with, the fact that the illicit market still exists and is still thriving, right? And not much is happening to shut that down. So that's still good. Although I have to admit, for us, I think in the edible space, the illicit market is not as strong as it is in the flower or the vape space, right? So because consumers are just, still have a lot of fear about the products that actually are in the illicit market. So. And then thirdly, you combine that with the growth in the hemp market and access to D8 and other cannabinoids, right, in the hemp market. So that is actually chewing up a bit of the market share from us as well. But I have to admit, from our perspective, we expected this to come. We knew that the sales were not going to be consistent post COVID. We also knew that the industry was going to have a time of reckoning at some point. We knew that the investors, would pull out at some point. I had a .com. I went through the .com bust. So I've been planning for this. I actually thought that it would hit before COVID, but it actually hit after COVID. So, that was a bit of news for me. I will say that I, used to predict a bit about the industry, and now I can't predict anything, because I recognize that absolutely anything can happen in this industry at any time. And every single company, MSO down to a new startup, are absolutely at risk in this environment right now. And so I think that creates a lot of complication. And so the sales have dropped, and so that has hit the retailers, and the retailers then are not necessarily paying the vendors on time and paying their taxes, and so that has a ripple effect on the entire industry and is causing the supply chain in California to fall apart a bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, from a risk perspective, just alone, I mean, when you're looking at the market, say 5 or 10 years ago to today, definitely you're seeing retailers and brands fall off like never before, especially in California. Do you feel like the state is starting to figure that out? I know there's been some consolidation at the state level as far as streamlining from three different entities into one for regulatory means, but like, are they beginning to figure out, like, hey, the regulations in California are really hindering the success of an industry that was otherwise, during Prop 215, explosive?
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't seen anything at the state level that has given me any optimism that they're really going to do much to support us, to be honest. I mean, I wish that wasn't the case. I know there are a lot of folks going to the state talking to them about this, but I have not seen any movement or any talk from them personally that would give me any kind of hope in that regard. So I think we're kind of left to fend for ourselves. And I think, to be honest, what has to happen is the industry needs to get together and work closely together, right, which is something we've never really done before. But we have to support each other. We have to work well together to navigate through this. And yeah, not everyone's going to make it through this madness for sure, right? But you know, I think if we can work a little bit more closely and help each other through this, then I think we, you know, many of us can get through this, you know, and come out the other side. But you know, I was telling my team 2 years ago that, you know, the thunder clouds were starting to show up in the distance and we needed to prepare. And then, you know, about eight months ago, I said, you know, the storm is finally here. And now what I tell people is that, you know, it's raining cats and dogs right now. So we're in the midst of it. And I think we've got another 12 to 18 months of just challenges for us to get through and resetting of the industry at this time in California. But I think also, you know, we're seeing signs of this all over, right? You know, we're strong in Massachusetts. You know, Massachusetts is starting to get its first kind of inklings of some stress in the market. You know, we're in Nevada as well. Nevada has had some challenges for a while, but you know, it's a highly competitive market, but still, you know, not nearly as struggling as California is. We're about to open in Illinois. I think that's, you know, that's still a pretty strong market. So, you know, it's not the same everywhere, but to be honest, I mean, a lot of the players are in California, right? And we and the brands, we're going throughout the country. And so, you know, if we get hit hard in California, it's going to impact what we do in other states.
Well, and arguably from a standpoint, you know, California being kind of the originator of a lot of the culture surrounding the cannabis industry, when you're looking at a lot of states now opening up on the East Coast as opposed to on the West Coast, do you think that that's helping kind of balance out, say, states that were amped up from a market that was surrounded by, say, criminalization and starting to kind of balance out as far as who's going where in order to get product? And are we going to kind of see that continuing as more markets open up, or are we going to just see a reduction due to consumer spending because of a recession?
I think it's a little of both, to be honest. I mean, you know, consumers, you know, recession, right? We're sort of in a recession, but not really. It's kind of interesting, right? You know, we still got full employment. People have jobs, which, you know, blows my mind, to be honest. So, you know, I think people are still willing to spend on cannabis. It's just, we cannot compare the industry during COVID with the industry pre-COVID and the industry today. And if you look at the numbers in California, we're not that far from the pre-COVID levels. We just aren't, you know? And so I think that's illuminating, right? And to be honest, as more states open up, yeah, tourists are gonna stop flying in as much to go buy weed in California, right? And we've seen this in Colorado. Colorado was booming. But, you know, sales have dropped by 30% in Colorado. Why? Because the states around Colorado are all opening up. So you know, the business is going elsewhere. So I think there's a fair amount of that. But it's just a reality of the industry. I think the much bigger challenge for all of us is that as an industry, we've done a terrible job of recruiting new consumers into the industry to consume cannabis products. And part of that is because our messaging has been unclear and our teamwork has been almost non-existent, right? So we have to work better to make cannabis products that are appealing to all kinds of demographics. And when I look at our numbers today, the demographics of who are really buying our products and buying other products in other categories consistently, it's still the heavy consumer, right? The casual consumers are not shopping that often. And so I think we need to make products for them that allow them to buy more frequently. And shelf space is so expensive and at such a premium that the long tail of variety of SKUs in the industry just doesn't exist. And that's what the hemp market has supplied. There's all kinds of products in the hemp market. And that's one of the reasons that they're doing so well, is because these other types of consumers are now shopping in the hemp market because they can get different potencies. They can get different types of products, different types of cannabinoids, and that's something that where we have failed for a variety of reasons, but also probably because the regulations make it difficult.
Yeah, I was going to say right there, I think regulations are really holding you guys back. I still remember during the 215 days in the California market where you can get 1,000 milligrams at a time, nowadays restricted to 100 milligram packaging. Especially when your major consumer is your heavy hitters. It's really hard to buy 10 bags of edibles at a time for one party. when you're looking, say, at the consumer that is eating edibles, obviously, Kana, your flagship brand at Sunderstorm, has it surprised you as far as kind of the almost invitation to edibles into the social use lounge space? I've kind of seen a lot of people talking about food pairings nowadays and having terpenes along with edibles and stuff like that with their flower pairings. As you see markets such as Nevada, obviously finally ended the sunset clause and social use licensing, they're going to start coming on board. Are you hopeful that that will start bringing back more people to the edible market who maybe are the casual consumer that just want to have a nice night out versus get ripped, so to speak?
Yeah, I actually think the edible market is growing nicely, to be honest, and for all good reasons, right? There's a lot of us that just don't like to smoke, right? And, you know, that I think that that base of consumers that are coming into the industry that don't want to smoke, they're turning to edibles 100%, right? So yes, I am encouraged by the growth in the edibles industry. I'm glad that we're one of the top edible brands in the country, because I know it's going to be to our benefit. But it also means that we have to be innovative and make sure we deliver products for all these new consumers. And to be honest, I'm very excited about this social lounge and opportunity. I think that, you know, they have all failed as far as I've seen to date, right? You had Lowell Cafe, you know, the restaurant in West Hollywood that was hot for a minute and then, you know, completely collapsed. I think a lot of consumers don't necessarily want to smoke weed and eat dinner at the same time. But that doesn't mean that they wouldn't eat an edible, you know, with their dinner or something, or have a cannabis meal, a cannabis infused meal. So I think there's some of that. I think ultimately what it really comes down to is two things. One is creating a social environment where people can actually hang out and consume cannabis and enjoy the experience, enjoy socializing together. Cannabis has always been a social experience and always will be. And we need to provide environments that enhance that, right? And so that's one. And then secondly, I think that we really need to dial in the opportunity for events, right? And for things like concerts and comedy shows and entertainment for the cannabis consumer, where you can go and consume and go to a show and have a great time, right? So a lot of people are doing that already, right? We know that. But, you know, it's kind of a joke when you can go to a concert and, you know, smoke a joint, right? You know, covertly. But now you got to go to some social space where to do it. But I've said this for years. We need to figure out the right recipe for these lounges. And I'm telling you, I firmly believe that recipe will be dialed in here in Las Vegas, because, you know, it's I've been waiting for Nevada to open this up. And, you know, this is the center of entertainment. And if anybody is going to figure out how to create an environment where we can have a great time and consume cannabis, it's going to be Las Vegas. And so I think what we learn here will spread elsewhere. But I have to admit also, the new lounges opening up in West Hollywood are encouraging. There are some interesting things going on there. Yes, yeah, exactly. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. But I really do think that we've got to figure out a way to consume cannabis in a very social environment. And lastly, Thailand has opened up recently, and, you know, we're big over there. We're about to open up our facility and start production. You know, there is a lot of consumption of cannabis in the bar scene over there, right? So, you know, that is an early indication about what really needs to happen to make this social environment work.
Especially, I was about to ask you about that. When you're looking at the international market, Spain, you have Germany looking like they're going to just explode. Thailand, obviously, is already exploding. Is it discouraging as a major corporation here in the United States that is producing arguably one of the, I mean, you mentioned one of the best edibles in the country. I would argue one of the best edibles in the world. When you're taking a look at the totality of the industry, is it saddening that the United States hasn't adopted a wider policy so that you could have kind of those international trademarks and intellectual property so that you can kind of compete with people like Canada who get those subsidies, who are able to work with the government and kind of flourish their business? Do you feel like you're in competition almost with the federal government at this point, trying to make a business?
You know, there's no doubt that here in the U.S., the federal government and the way their policy on cannabis has hampered our ability to develop an appropriate industry. The states have actually all hampered our ability to develop an appropriate industry with over-regulating and really putting way too many hurdles in front of us and overtaxing and all of the above. But, I wish that it would be a little bit easier. But in some ways also, I do have to admit that not having federal legalization has allowed a lot of us to grow from small companies to big companies so that we can take on CPG when they finally do enter the industry at some point. So that has helped us a little bit. But, you know, it would be great if I didn't have to set up a new facility, right, spend millions of dollars in every new state to be able to build my business. Without investor capital right now coming to us, it's very hard for us to really grow our business in the U.S. and open up in all these different states. So note to the investors, focus on the companies that are actually making money today. There's about 5% of us. Yeah. And throw your money to us because we're going to win. We're going to be the winners in this industry. So don't hold back right now. Now's the time to invest. But back on the point, we also see that the global market is a huge opportunity for us. We're excited to see it open up. And to be honest, if I can't export from the U.S., then I'm going to continue to build my business out of Thailand, and they're going to get the tax revenue, and I'm going to export globally from there. So, we've seen this previously in the U.S. and other industries where they've gone offshore, and here we're doing it again. I really wish that we could do it from here, but we can't. So. I'm gonna build one of the first global cannabis brands, and we're doing it right now.
And you guys are absolutely crushing it. Now we've seen SAFE Banking come up, pass the lower house, fail every single time. Are you hopeful for some type of banking reform or 280E sublimation so that you guys can actually operate as a regular business in the United States, or do you think federal legalization is going to happen first and force that issue?
I have the same amount of hope today that I did, like 8 years ago. So my hope is still there, but my pessimism is healthy. So I can't predict anything that happens at the federal level, to be honest. And I'm not building my business based upon that, to be honest. We just got to navigate as we navigate. It's a very dynamic industry. The players in the industry who haven't been able to pivot quickly to be able to adapt to all the changes and nuances of the industry, I think, have suffered along the way. Fortunately, we have a great team that has been able to allow us to navigate through this. I think it's, those two issues, right? SAFE Banking and 280E are just massive for this industry. And if we can't get those issues dealt with now, at the moment now where the industry is really hurting and companies are failing left and right, the failure of Herbal is just,
insane.
A huge indicator of the fact that that every single company is at risk, right? So we need this right now. It's the one thing that could really, really prop this industry up and really help all of us. So, if folks in the federal government are listening, please let's put this through. And to be honest, I think it's only a handful of people in the federal government that are actually holding this back. I mean, the majority are fully behind this, but it's just being blocked by a few people that are stigmatized by the past and just are unwilling to open their minds to the power of this medicinal plant. And it's unbelievably frustrating for all of us and the consumers as well.
Well, when I talked to Vicente Fox, the former president of Mexico, he called for Biden to legalize. Obviously, everybody in the United States, at least 80% at this point, do want to see some type of adult use legalization or decriminalization, rescheduling at the very least. What does 2024 look like for Sunderstorm? What are your major plans coming up in the year ahead?
Yeah. Honestly, let's look backward a little bit, right? So 2022 for us was a year of resetting. right? We saw the storm coming. We had to put some changes through to our company. We dialed in our efficiencies a bit. We moved into some new facilities, cut our costs. 2023 has been kind of a slow but steady kind of kind of a setup of new planning, right? And so we're aligning ourselves for really rapid growth in 2024. So this year has really just been identifying new opportunities, looking where we want to focus our energy. We're opening up in Illinois imminently. We're opening up in Thailand imminently. We've got other projects that are about to launch for us as well. We're going to try some new categories. For us, 2024 is going to be a really exciting year for our company. And I've told my team, like, this is the moment for us when we push the pedal to the metal. We've actually tripled the size of our marketing team right now, because we know that now when we make noise, people are going to listen, right? And so, and when we're out there delivering messaging about, how important our brand is and how we can connect to the consumer and the kinds of things that we stand for and all of that, like, this is the moment for us to really deliver that messaging. And so we're all excited. You know, it's hard. We're getting punched in the face every day. The CCB just delivered us two massive hits this year in Nevada for things that had nothing to do with our company. And they just don't even realize what the downstream ramifications are of their holds. And it's really unfortunate. These regulators just have no clue what it means to run a business in this industry. So it's hard. But having said that, we're going to get through it, and we're excited about 2024. We're going to see great growth. We're opening up in Thailand. We're going to access the global market. We're developing all new products for the global market, because it's much more medically oriented. And I think 2024, 2025 look amazing for us. So, we're playing a slightly different game than our competitors, and we're happy to do so, because we're carving our own path, and we're building one of the first truly global cannabis brands.
Well, and you guys are absolutely crushing it. A huge fan of what you guys put out for the holiday season, your sugar plums, absolutely amazing. If a dispensary in a market that you're currently operating in wants to get on your distribution chain, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Reach out to us through our website, send an email to info@sunderstorm.com. We're happy to, or reach out to us on Instagram, at Kana Treats. We're happy to, we have people monitoring all of those channels, and we would love to be on more shelves. We'd love to support people in this industry. We're in over 700 stores in California. We're very proud of that. We're doing very well in Nevada and Massachusetts, and we're excited about our Illinois launch. So particularly anybody in Illinois wants to sign up, please do. We are taking pre-orders right now.
Well, Windy City, do not sleep on Kana. I mean, obviously, one of my favorite edible brands and one of the world's now favorite edible brands. Really appreciate your time, Cameron, co-founder over at Sunderstorm. Keep crushing it, my brother.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
We would like to thank Cameron for his time and being on today's episode. If you'd like to find out more about Sunderstorm, make sure to visit them online at www.sunderstorm.com. And that'll do it for our first session from MJ BizCon. Make sure to stay tuned, as we have plenty more coverage from the show floor here on Conversations in Cannabis.